This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Michael Loewinger. So far in this hour, I've explained how I first came across Zello back in 2019, as I was watching these militia groups organize around hurricane relief. And I've laid out how the app allowed me to document the potential relationships between far-right groups and the police all across the country. It felt like the writing was on the wall, but we didn't know for what. With the events of January 6th, you can see how those pieces began to coalesce. After Zello refused to take action against militia organizing on its platform last year, this is what the app sounded like in the lead up to the insurrection.
January 6th, revolution or bust.
That's what the I got a problem with. How about if all of us stand the up and take this back? Well, I got a problem with patriots not growing a set of damn nuts.
Once we go operational, this channel will just be for intel gathering and organizing on the backside.
On January 5th, Hampton and I noticed that 1% Watchdog, the guy I introduced you to at the beginning of the show, had created a channel called Stop the Steal J6 with about 100 people in it. The next day, I had it running in the background while I watched the violence unfold on TV.
Okay, guys, we're on open channel here now.
Hey, brother, we're boots on the ground here. We're moving on to Capitol now. I'll give you a boots on the ground update here in a few.
That, of course, is Jessica Watkins, the Oath Keeper now indicted for breaking into the Capitol. 1% Watchdog later told me over text that he didn't know Jessica or that she was in the channel, though the two can be heard in conversation.
What percentage of the crowd is going to the Capitol?
100%, and everybody's marching on the Capitol, all million of us.
This next part is what federal investigators seem most focused on.
We have a good group. We got about 30, 40 of us. We're sticking together and sticking to the plan.
More on that in a moment, but first, let's follow her to the Capitol.
And we're about 2 blocks away from it now, and police are doing nothing. They're not even trying to stop us at this point.
The wild thing about listening to an active insurrection on Zello is the group dynamic. While she's working her way through the mob outside the building, she has 1% Watchdog and others in her ear, sharing intel from home, cheering her on in real time.
U.S. military news is reporting that the national capital has been breached. That's right. This is a can of whoop made in America. Yeah.
Witness in history, Watchdog.
And encouraging her to kidnap politicians.
You are executing citizens' arrests. Arrest this assembly. We have probable cause. Acts of treason, election fraud.
Jessica Watkins can be seen in live stream footage taken around this time, showing a line of militia members very deliberately parting the crowd as they approach the doors. Hampton describes the video.
In footage shared by Ford Fisher of News to Share, there is a column of Oath Keepers who are very clearly part of a unit. They march up to the east entrance of the Capitol building just a few minutes before the doors are breached. Ford zooms in on one of the people involved and a patch that he has on his back that says, "I don't believe in anything. I'm just here for the violence."
About three people back, we see Jessica Watkins dressed in full battle rattle. According to other footage discovered by internet sleuths, she helped lead the crowd in pushing the east entrance door open before fighting her way into the Capitol Rotunda.
We are in the mezzanine. We are in the main dome right now. We are rocking it. They're throwing grenades. They're freaking shooting people with paintballs, but we're in here.
Be safe. God bless and Godspeed and keep going.
Get it, Jess. Do your. This is what we lived up for. Everything we train for?
Following our report on these communications in January, the Department of Justice began quoting these Zello chats in indictments, along with quite a bit of information about Watkins' alleged plans and motivations.
This is a woman who had served honorably in Afghanistan and was from a place in Ohio where there really wasn't much going on.
Marcy Wheeler, an independent journalist who publishes on her site emptywheel.net, has been poring over all of the reporting and court records related to the Sixth.
She was, I think, given an identity in the Oath Keepers that probably replaced what she had in the military. It was structure, it was considered honorable, they could go out and feel like they were protectors of America.
As the inauguration grew nearer, Jessica Watkins indicated that she was awaiting direction from President Trump. Specifically, they say she sent a text on November 9th saying, "If Trump asks me to come, I will."
According to her boyfriend, Watkins had started her own militia, the Ohio State Regulars, as a storm relief group a year earlier. But after Trump lost the election, she ramped up her involvement with the Oath Keepers by recruiting militiamen to come to D.C. to act as private security for Roger Stone. A video uncovered by ABC News shows that at least three Oath Keepers did end up spending time with him in D.C., though I haven't seen anything to prove that he and Jessica Watkins interacted.
Roger Stone doesn't need these people to defend them. I think that that was the lure to get her, to get people. That function of saying, okay, you're going to be security for these VIPs who are one degree from the president of the United States, that's like glamour.
Ultimately, Watkins was able to rope in enough people from Ohio that she was rewarded with an invite to the Oath Keepers leadership chat room on Signal, an encrypted messaging app, in December, which put her in touch with Oath Keepers who had traveled from Florida and Alabama, along with the founder of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rhodes, who was in D.C. on January 6th, but hasn't been indicted yet.
So these are these Signal chats, which will form the backbone of the actual conspiracy case.
In fact, the government has those chat logs because they were still on her phone when she was arrested on January 18th.
They got to Watkins before she deleted anything, and she, you know, didn't want to perjure herself. She knew enough not to do that. A bunch of other people did delete stuff.
People in that chat room make up a large chunk of the 16-person conspiracy case. But remember, Watkins said,
"We have a good group. We got about 30, 40 of us. We're sticking together and sticking to the plan."
What do we know about the 30 to 40?
Right? I'm waiting for those other 15 people. There's a group from North Carolina we haven't seen arrested yet. Some of them stayed in Virginia, staying at the Comfort Inn in Ballston, guarding the weapons that everyone had stashed there.
The government claims the Oath Keepers stored a cache of weapons for a QRF, or Quick Reaction Force, that would respond to the Capitol armed if President Trump were to, quote, declare an insurrection and to call us up as the militia.
This brings us to the plan, or as Marcy Wheeler says, one of the possible plans.
They were basically talking about preventing the Democratic transfer of power, either by doing something so outrageous in Congress that the expected Biden supporters would rise up as well. Or their just presumptive notion that enough quote-unquote Antifa would show up in the streets and they could perform being victims again and sow enough violence to give Trump the excuse to call in the National Guard.
And then by calling in the National Guard,
then you say, you can't transfer power, we're in the middle of an insurrection. You can't transfer power, we're at war. You can't transfer power, D.C. has been locked down under the National Guard to protect them from those evil Antifas.
A week after January 6th, Hampton and I sent an email to Zello detailing this evidence that its app had been used by insurrectionists, along with an updated list of over 800 far-right channels. Then we reported those findings in The Guardian. And then, a couple hours later,
Zello released a statement on their site saying that they were appalled by the organizing that was happening on their app and that they were banning 2,000 channels.
Maybe a third or so came from the list of 800 plus channels we sent them.
Oh yeah, for sure. Of the 800 plus, the majority of them are now offline, either deleted by the users or removed by Zello itself.
Many of the groups that we were tracking on Zello relied on that app and its network. And now that network, in most cases, is gone. Is it fair to say that a lot of these groups are sort of in shambles? after January 6th?
I think a lot of them are struggling to find their footing, for sure. In some of the channels, I heard people say pretty explicitly that Zella would never ban them, that it was the one thing that they could always depend on. Militias are just like one piece of the broader puzzle. And I think militias themselves are maybe a little bit quiet right now, because if they're smart, they're probably on the lookout for what the FBI is up to.
The groups don't really disappear, and the ideas that they espouse certainly don't disappear. They just might change focus, they might change platform, they might change the volume. So they're maybe quieter at the moment.
Megan Squire, a professor of computer science at Elon University.
As the people start feeling more emboldened, as they feel stronger, they'll re-coalesce into groups again. I like to think of a jar of marbles. You drop it on the floor, it shatters everywhere, and the marbles are rolling all around, right? Well, eventually they find the little dips and the circles in the floor, and they kind of collect back up.
I'm personally convinced that part of what motivated militias to break into the Capitol, the belief that they need to protect a mythical vision of America at all costs, is here to stay. But it's also possible that the role of national far-right groups will diminish even as violence continues. January 6th and its aftermath has crystallized an idea that had been percolating among researchers, that the far right in America has entered what's called a post-organizational or post-group paradigm.
Both terms really capture what we're seeing in the modern far right.
Cynthia Miller-Idris is the director of the Polarization and Extremism Research Innovation Lab at American University.
Groups do still matter. I don't mean to say that they don't. There are a lot of groups that exist, but the vast majority of people who radicalize into these kinds of movements are encountering the propaganda and the information online, but may never actually formally join a group.
While the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys contributed significantly to the violence and planning on January 6th, about 85% of those arrested after the insurrection had no prior involvement in a formal far-right organization.
One of my biggest concerns is that as a country that we look at January 6th as the end of something, as the culmination of something. We even hear that language a lot.
January 6th was really the culmination of a months-long coordinated effort by Donald Trump.
What happened on January 6th was in many ways the culmination of all of these forces.
It was the last day of the Trump era, and it ended in chaos and frankly disgrace.
I think we should be more open to the possibility that it was a continuation or even a beginning of something in terms of mobilization. When you look at the long arcs of history around the world and how democracies have stumbled, these aren't usually things that happen super rapidly. They are an accumulation over time of many small injuries and large injuries that chip away at people's trust in the system, at their trust in the legitimacy of information, and increase their sense of betrayal and anger and their willingness to believe that violence is a legitimate solution.
Miller-Idris warns that this is not the end of the citizen militia, more like a lull before the next storm hits. But in the wake of January 6th, Zello has gone quiet. The far-right groups have been banned, and the app is no longer the meeting place for all things insurrection. Rumor has it, some members are going back to basics and have started using ham radio to organize. Hampton and I are looking into that. As for 1% Watchdog,
today we're going to be talking about the January 6th Capitol protest and what happened on Zello.
He sent me this clip from a podcast episode he was working on, which he said would feature an investigation of me.
We'll also be talking about the infiltration and takedown of Zello by leftist media headed by WNYC of New York Public Radio.
I watched his podcast feed waiting for the episode to drop, but it never did. I reached out to him for comment for this story, and again, no response. Then, a militia member leaked me some texts that he'd sent late one night in mid-April. Quote, "No more USCF, no more podcast, no more Zello, no more hurricanes. I need my life back. 6 years was long enough to prove to me that there's nothing for us to do other than to wait for the tyrants to make a mistake and to piss off a big enough crowd to take them out."
We've got the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution.
1% Watchdog may have signed off for now, but we're here for the long haul. For On the Media, I'm Micah Loewinger.
too. They think they're coming for us. I say we're coming for you.
And that's the show. On the Media is produced by Leia Feder, Micah Loewinger, Eloise Blondio, Rebecca Clark Callender, and Molly Schwartz, with help from Ellen Lee. Zandra Ellen writes our unique newsletter. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Katya Rogers is our executive producer. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.